Hello, everyone, and welcome back to HOA, It's a True Story. I'm your host, Reagan Brown, and my guest today is Kieran Purcell. He's an attorney and the managing shareholder of Epstein Law Firm. He is the chair of CLAC and is here today to talk about HOA's responsibility to participate and follow HOA legislation. Thank you for joining us today, and welcome to HOA, It's a True Story, Kieran.
Well, thank you, Reagan and Bill. I appreciate you inviting me to join you.
And of course, also joining us today is Bill Mann, president of GB Group Construction
Thank you, Reagan.
Painting. So, Kieran, let's jump right into this and talk a little bit about yourself and your role, how you got into HOA law and your role in this whole CLAC deal.
Sure. Well, I'm an attorney with Epstein in San Diego, California. I happened to meet John Epstein my second year of law school. He invited me to do an internship with him, and then that worked out well. So I came back and clerked for him after that. So the internship was when I was in law school, and clerking when I was after I graduated, waiting to pass the bar. And I've been there ever since. It was 29 years now in January. So it wasn't something I intended to do when I went to law school, but I enjoyed working with John and his firm, and the rest, as they say, is history. So I've been.
So I have to ask the question, what kind of law were you thinking you were going to go into?
Well, I was interested in real estate and construction related issues. And so it was fate, I guess, because Catherine Rosenberg, who wrote much of the Davis-Sterling Act back in the day, was teaching the class. She was on sabbatical that month, so John was teaching it in her absence. And so it was just one of those serendipitous kind of things that just kind of happened. But it's been a great experience. I did construction litigation, construction defect work for, gosh, I don't know, the first third of my time there. And then when things started quieting down in the building cycle, that I ended up shifting over and doing more work on the corporate counsel side, where I do a lot of construction project work and, you know, almost construction management close. Not as smart as you are, Bill, but we do things that are kind of adjacent to that from our standpoint. But I've done the full gamut, I think.
Yeah, the industry is getting older, so there's a lot more of that. So
absolutely. Well, it's getting more complicated.
How did you get involved as the chair for CLAC?
Well, I was involved in the San Diego CAI chapter, and I was the outgoing president of the chapter, and I wanted to stay involved in some way, but I didn't want to be as involved as being the chapter president. So I volunteered for the, and in those days we called all the chapter legislative committees CLAC, and then we realized that we were doing that wrong per the national doctrine from the CAI, and they all became legislative support committees. But I became a delegate from the San Diego chapter in the mid-2000s, about 2007, and have stayed involved ever since. And then more recently, about 6 years ago, I got on the executive committee for CLAC, which I was in the legislative co-chair role. So myself and another attorney basically read a lot of the bills as they came along and worked with our legislative consultant, which is the fancy politically correct word for a lobbyist these days. And from there, I kind of got a little bit more involved and became the chair of CLAC about a year and a half ago. So my time is winding down. My term ends in September of 2024.
Okay. Well, we did a podcast early on in our, I think, season one on CLAC. But I wanted to kind of briefly go back there for a second and talk about what CLAC does and how it works before we get into its importance. So let's go for a brief description of CLAC.
Sure. So CLAC is the California Legislative Action Committee. And the committee part is because we actually work as a committee for CAI National. And so there's 50 states all have CAI chapters. And some of them, if you're a small state like Delaware, you just have one chapter. And so your CLAC and your chapter are kind of the same thing. In California, we have 8 different chapters, and each one of those chapters has what's called a legislative support committee, an LSC. And so the LSCs each have 2 delegates that come out of the chapter. So the boards of those chapters decide who those delegates will be. And those are the folks that sit on our delegate body and help us make decisions with regard to what bills to consider. And ultimately, we have a planning meeting each year, and those delegates actually vote on which bills are going forward. I know that we wanted to talk about that a little bit later. But so CLAC is got a one full-time employee who's our administrator. And then we have the rest are volunteers and one independent consultant, which is our lobbyist. But so basically, delegates are from all the different categories of membership in CAI. We have homeowners and community managers. We have a lot of attorneys just because of the nature of looking at legislation. It's unfortunately kind of complicated. But we try to, and you know, we have folks from the building industry and other constituent members, the contracting side of the house. And so we try to have representation from all the different constituent groups inside of CAI, because they all have a slightly different version of what works for them. And we want to make sure we're representing everybody.
Well, I think one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about today is why it's important for ownership of management companies and then the managers themselves to really focus on getting boards involved, because I feel like they do have a fiduciary responsibility to this, because basically the laws are going to ultimately affect them. And if they don't pay attention, you know, it could have a negative outcome that then you're scrambling backwards, right?
Absolutely. And they say about you kind of get the laws you let happen. And so if you don't get involved, if you don't vote and you don't participate, then, government goes on around you. And so I think a good example of what you're talking about is that sometimes people think that, this idea is too small or it's not important enough. And so they don't act. A couple of years ago, back in 2018, there's a fairly large master plan senior community in Orange County. And they were looking at, if you recall, but it used to be when an HOA was adopting a rule, they had to put it out to the members for a 30-day review and comment period, and then ultimately the board could approve it. And so this association did the math, and between the February being 28 days and federal holidays and all this kind of stuff, they realized that there was 3 out of the 12 months in which there wasn't 30 days between their meetings, and so they weren't able to effectively adopt a rule in that time frame. And so they went to their legislator for that district, and they amended or proposed a Senate bill which amended the policy to reduce the review and comment period from 30 days to 28 days, so they could have the ability to adopt new rules every month that they chose to do so. And so sometimes just a small little thing like that made a really big difference inside the community. And so that I think it's really helpful to get input from the grassroots level, from the owners in the community talking to their boards and their community managers, and then the managers talking to the leadership inside of their management companies and communicating that to ourselves or to our parallel entity in CACM, who's also very, very active in the legislative process, in order to make sure we understand what's impacting their lives. And then we can hopefully take some action to help make that a little bit better for them.
You brought up some interesting things. Now, I was very involved in CLAC decades ago, unfortunately. I still go to the day at the Capitol. But
we'll look forward to seeing you in April.
Yeah, one of the things that that I've kind of found unusual, at least back in the day, is sometimes it was just like one angry homeowner and some legislator would suddenly try to put a bill into effect. And it really wasn't like a grassroots thing. It was really like one individual complaining and got the ear of the right person. Next thing you know, they're trying to pass legislation. Do you still see that?
You do see it periodically, and it's funny when you go around and if you've been through we call it Advocacy Week now, so it used to be Legislative Days at the Capitol. But
I'm learning all kinds of new terms from you today.
Yes.
Well, we're just trying to align ourselves with the folks in CAI National started calling it Advocacy Week when they go to Congress, and we figured we should align ourselves with their terminology. But yeah, you sometimes do see that when you talk to the legislators and you say, gosh, where did this darn bill come from? And it's a letter from some angry homeowner. Now it's an email, I guess, but being very persistent about it. And if the legislator's role is kind of interesting, if you think of it on the community management side, that they don't necessarily know that 95% of the people are happy in their community because they don't always come to the meetings, but they meet the angry 5% who call them up or shoot them emails or bring their issues to light. And that's how the legislature is too, that, you know, if you're happy about your community, you're not calling your assembly member. And so that's kind of where it starts. And sometimes it's just, it's bad information too, that so you see people adopting bills that work, you know, cross purposes with other existing bills, and a little less of that than there was, just because I think between CAI, CLAC, and then also CACM, we're much more active and we're able to hopefully spot those things earlier. And so that, you know, you see it less, but you still see it occasionally, Bill.
So as far as the support, you have one lobbyist still, which kind of surprised me because the industry has grown tremendously over the last couple of decades. Did you see your force at the Capitol increasing in size, or has it all come down to dollars and cents?
Well, the pandemic was a game changer in that world, because like your experience where people physically would travel from across the state to Sacramento and they'd spend a day talking with our CLAC delegates and with our legislative advocate and so forth to get educated about the various bills that we either were campaigning for or we were campaigning against. And then we go across the street and they would have meetings with, so you try to have a meeting with your own assembly person or your own senator. So as a constituent, your voice is louder than if I was talking to them or if our advocate was talking to them, because you actually vote. And if you actually, you know, next time you look in the, you know, at the election results, sometimes in the assembly, people win by a handful of votes. And so that it's not like a national election where it's millions and millions of votes, that sometimes it really gets down to a small handful of votes. And so they do listen. And so now with the pandemic, though, that we were forced, like a lot of industries, to shift everything virtually. And so instead of only 50 to 100 people traveling to Sacramento, which has an impact, but a smaller impact, in the last few years, we had 40 people from one delegate district would actually virtually show up in the background. And that really made an impact, because, you know, obviously you got the Brady Bunch box, right, pop up, and the legislator's like, oh my gosh, you know, there's all these registered voters in my office virtually. And so that gave us a little more clout. And so now, even though the pandemic has resided and we're able to meet in person starting this year as our first live event in Sacramento, because we didn't want to lose all that participation, we are doing a hybrid event. So folks who can't afford to travel or take, you know, a couple of days off of work to be up there, will have an opportunity to participate and have their voice be heard. And that really helps us, because ultimately the votes are what make an impact. And social media makes a big impact. You know, when things get viral, legislators pay attention to that. And so that a lot of that grassroots effort is not so much phone calls or letters like it used to be. You know, emails and social media posts are very effective means to show that you have support either for a bill or support in the opposition to a bill. And that can really be effective.
Kelly couldn't join us today, but she has testified at Sacramento to a bill before and kind of went through what that experience was like. How do you guys select somebody that you want to go in front of legislators and talk about the bill? How do you find those individuals?
Well, hopefully in-house, we have someone who's got that experience. We recently, insurance has been a big issue in the community association world for the last few years. And so we're fortunate that we have a lot of insurance brokers inside of our organization. And so we're able to reach out, and if somebody's talking about fire insurance or property insurance, and find someone who's got expertise in that area. But the best experience when you can do it, and this happened just last year on our 1458, the quorum bill, was we had a woman who is named Betty Roth. Betty is a retired community manager. Betty lives in the Riverside area, and she lives in a fairly large senior community and was trying to get on our board of directors. But because of the fact that the community is so large, that for many years, they actually hadn't actually been able to have a quorum, so they weren't able to have an election. Mm-hmm. And so she, as a delegate, communicated to us about this issue, and we were able to find an author in Sacramento, a legislator, an assembly member, Ta, 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 who brought that bill for us that allowed for a reduced quorum. And that when came time to talk and testify in front of the Housing and Community Development Committee, they didn't want to hear from me, or they didn't want to hear from our advocate, Louie Brown. They wanted to hear from somebody who was directly impacted by it. And Betty was a tremendous witness. And she talked about her own personal experience, and that really swayed the committee. And so it ultimately was passed unanimously, and now it's took effect in January of 2024. So that's, best case scenario is an actual individual who impacts them, and to talk about how the bill will change their life in a good way. And that made all the difference on that particular bill.
We mentioned a little bit about the growth of our industry. I think, Bill, you did. And we're really seeing a tremendous amount of new managers coming in, and they have so much to learn and so much to be involved with. How does CLAC want to reach those new managers and educate them in the importance of sharing this with their boards?
Well, you have to kind of be a bit of an octopus, and there's different methods of reaching different people that, I still physically read a newspaper, and I'm in a dwindling, market segment for that. But there's other people who, everything's digital, and then the next, my 14-year-old daughter, everything's, online, right? So the message may be the same, but the vehicle in which we communicate that message to other folks, it varies depending on who our audience is. And you're right that, and that's one of the things too, that we are trying hard to do inside of our organization is not only have representation from the various constituent groups, as far as the business partners and the community managers and homeowners and so forth, but also inside of that sometimes that when you're young and you're just getting started in industry, you spend so much energy learning your craft that you don't have the ability to participate. And so we lose out on that demographic, and that we're trying hard to do that is in our communications to the various boards, the CAI chapter boards and so forth, is try to get representation from folks who are brand new, as well as people who have been doing it for 20, 30 years, because their perspective is different, and that they also can teach us a lot if we're willing to listen to them.
Does a homeowner have to be a board member in order to participate in CLAC, or can it just be a homeowner?
We have several homeowner members. In fact, I'm on the legislative support committee for the San Diego chapter of CAI, and we have a woman who is a homeowner who got involved with the legislative support committee because she was concerned there had been election fraud inside of her HOA a number of years back. And so she's very active, and she serves on our election task force. And so let me talk just briefly about that. So when we have different bills that come forward, we have task forces that are created from delegate volunteers. And so we've had one dealing with, the balcony bill a couple of years ago, and we have currently are dealing with fire insurance, and we have an election task force right now that is underway as we're trying to move a electronic voting bill forward in 2024. And so we stand up task forces, which are combined members, delegates, but also we bring in other folks. So in the instance of the balcony bill issue, we brought in some reserve consultants because we didn't happen to have enough reserve consultant delegates, but that's an important part of the process is coming up with the money in order to make sure that associations can be active in maintaining their communities, so you don't have that deferred maintenance issues, which ultimately leads to, more expensive repairs, but also potentially those life safety type of issues that the balcony bill is trying to address. And same thing on the insurance side, bringing in insurance brokers to help us understand what needs to be done in order to try to address some of the insurance issues. And so when we don't have the folks who are in-house necessarily with that experience as delegates, that we reach out to other, as long as you're a member of CAI, you have the ability to participate in your legislative support committee at the chapter level, and then that the delegates come from there. And so that we hopefully get a fairly well-rounded input.
Well, if the homeowner's writing a letter to their manager or their board saying we have this issue, and then the manager is bringing that through an email to the attention of the legislators. Who actually ends up writing these bills? And is it more than one person, or is it usually one person just bringing it forward? How does the bill get introduced?
Sure. Well, if it's a CLAC-sponsored bill, then that task force, like we talked about, the election task force, works with there's an assembly member from San Diego who is going to carry that bill for us. And so CLAC and the assembly member staff work together to draft the original language of the bill. And then throughout the election or throughout the bill process, it goes through the various committees. And so the committees and their consultants and the legislators on those committees and their staffs all have a say in what that language is. And then there's also the Office of Legislative Counsel, which looks at the bills as well. So it starts off with language that we as CLAC and the author, who's the either senator or assembly person who brings it, we write it, and then it gets evolves across the process. So ultimately, by the time it gets approved and gets sent to the governor's desk, it may be a little bit different than what we start off with, but hopefully the core issue that we're trying to address is still effectively being addressed at the end of the day.
You know, at the federal level, we see these bills that have stuff kind of hidden inside them. Does that happen at the state level too, or where you have to decipher through?
Sure. And one of those issues, and I apologize, I don't remember the bill name, but so there's something called an omnibus bill. And an omnibus bill is a large bill which has supposedly minor changes to a number of different bills, and so that, or a number of different statutes. And so it may be that they're changing the pronouns, so it's gender neutral or something like that, or they're very small changes in it. But every once in a while, something very significant gets slipped in there. And so you might have seen that in the media recently, they were talking about how in 2023, there were inside of an omnibus bill, there was language which talked about how the your gas and electric bill was going to be how you paid it was going to depend on what income category you're in. Yes. So it kind of slipped by the goalie and nobody noticed it was happening. And then all of a sudden, you know, come January when constituents are complaining about it, an assembly person named Jackie Irwin from the Santa Barbara area is like, hey, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. You know, this is something that should have gone through the whole legislative process and that should have been debated and discussed, you know, rather than having just slip by with very little comment. And so she's got a bill that is looking to withdraw that from the omnibus bill and then go forward and talk about it there. So that it happens every once in a while, but hopefully, you know, there's usually a couple thousand bills that get introduced each year. And, you know, it's a laborious process to review them all. And occasionally you do miss some things like what happened there last year. But that you try to keep that to a minimum.
So how do you decide which ones CLAC is going to get behind and rally? Is that through the task force?
Well, we have something called an annual planning meeting, which we have in October. So right after the legislative process has concluded for 1 year, that we go ahead and we look at input we receive throughout the entire year. There's a group we have called the Legislative Strategy and Research Committee, the LSRC, Legislative Strategy and Research Committee. And so during the year, if you're a member and you write a letter to or shoot an email to somebody in CLAC or to a chapter, it gets sent to this LSRC. And then what we do in October is we all get together in a group and the delegates all talk about these bills, and then we also talk to our legislative consultant about whether or not something is it's feasible to actually bring that bill. And we say, hey, this bill has got merit. We think it's a great idea, but you know, a couple of years ago, everyone wanted to do electronic voting. You may recall we had a national election and all this concern about, you know, were the Russians you know doctoring the votes and were there voting machines that weren't working. And you know, so the conclusion was, well, really not the best time to bring an electronic voting bill because there's all this controversy. So, but a couple years later, you know, now we're in a position where we feel that the time might be ripe. So we're bringing one again. So that on the bills that we are drafting, they come from lots of different areas as far as the idea for the bill. And then the delegates ultimately vote on the bills that are going to go forward. And then we have to go out through our advocate and shop them around, because you want to try to find someone in Sacramento who's actually going to be the author of that bill. So a senator or an assembly person. And sometimes you're unlucky. We looked at, and it was partly because of the balcony bill and partly because of insurance. We were looking in 2023 to amend the ability for associations to bring emergency assessments in order to cover the cost, not only of the repairs, but also the inspection cost, which is not insignificant sometimes.
Right.
In the SB 326 world. And then also talked about, you know, that some of those folks, unfortunately, if you're in an area that is very prone to wildfires, you if you could get insurance at all, it might have gone up 300-400%. And so the ability to clarify in that emergency assessment statute that you could do that was something we wanted to do. But unfortunately, because of the fact that, you know, between inflation and, you know, just getting through the pandemic and lots of other economic factors, people were, well, affordable housing is an issue that Sacramento worries about all the time. Mm-hmm. Last year, it was, you know, very acute concern. And so we couldn't find an author who would bring that bill, because the concern was, well, we don't want to be in a position where it looks like we're sponsoring a bill that's going to make homes less affordable in California. And so, you know, we had to withdraw that bill because we couldn't find anybody to bring it forward for us in 2020.
How does your committee deal with, you know, you represent different groups. So if you have something that's more pro-management, maybe less HOA or more HOA, less pro-management, how do you guys decide how you're going to support those or not support those?
Well, it ultimately comes down to a vote of the delegates. And that's why it's so important to have delegates from all those different constituent groups. And that, it's a little bit of a dated example, but I can think of, it was probably about 10 years ago. So a couple of droughts ago, when the idea, you know, it used to be that associations had a very strict language, either in their CCNRs or their landscape guidelines that talk, you know, lush tropical landscaping, and owners had very limited ability to do any sort of drought tolerant landscaping, you know, the dreaded xeriscape term, you know, that people used to get very excited about. And so that there was a movement afoot that was going to allow, through a bill to allow owners to remove their lawn and replace it with artificial turf. And so on the HOA side, so the managers and the board members were all, you know, up in arms, and a lot of them didn't, you know, the management side didn't want to have it. Some of the owners did. And then, of course, you had landscapers who said, well, we mow the grass, but, you know, we're also in the business of taking out the grass and putting in the artificial turf. And so it was very challenging to try to balance three different constituent groups, which all had, you know, various input about that, and they came to different opinions. So ultimately, the bill did get passed about, 14 years ago or so. But that it was significantly different than how it started, because it had to satisfy those three different categories of
people. That's so interesting. We have just a little bit of time left, and I want to ask a little bit about the Corporate Transparency Act. Can you kind of touch on that for a minute?
Sure. Well, there's that old joke about how laws are written by lawyers to make sure their fellow lawyers have plenty to do. And the Corporate Transparency Act kind of falls into that category. It's a federal bill that was enacted in 2021, but didn't take effect until January of 2024. And it has a very, a positive kind of goal about enhancing transparency, combating money laundering and tax fraud and all sorts of other illicit activities, at which point you're probably saying, what does it have to do with the homeowners association world? Which is kind of our question too. And so the idea is it's trying to capture information about who owns corporations that operate inside the financial market. And so that it excludes large companies that have at least 20 employees or $5 million or more in gross receipts and sales, because those are already tracked inside the Treasury Department. And so it's trying to get at smaller corporations. And so we, as most California associations are nonprofit mutual benefit corporations, kind of are unintended participants in this reporting requirement. And so that on the national level, CAI National is working with Congress in order to try to address this bill. And one thing that the bill took effect in January of 2024, but if you're a corporation that existed prior to January of 2024, you have the entire year, so till December 31 of 2024, to submit your report. And so there was an effort that was successful on the House of Representatives side in 2023 that a bill was passed that would have allowed the reporting to be delayed by a year. And that now it's gone over to the Senate, and the Senate is in the process of reviewing a similar bill. And that, of course, it's an election year, so there's a lot of, you know, the Ukraine and Gaza and, you know, lots of other things that are taking attention away from this issue. But the in the Senate level, the belief is that there's a pretty good chance that a one-year extension will be granted to prevent people from having to make their reports in 2024. But the hope of the CAI and CSM and others that there'd be some sort of HOA exclusion would seem to have a little traction at the House of Representatives level. Doesn't appear that it's going to be successful at the Senate level. So with a little luck, we'll get an extension of a year, and that but the chance of getting an exemption is pretty unlikely. And so the thing that's got everybody so concerned about it is that the Corporate Transparency Act requires individuals who are involved on boards to provide their names, their birthdays, their home address, and then some sort of federal ID, like a driver's license or a passport, those kind of things. And so obviously a lot of that stuff could be, you know, used in identity theft. And so there's a lot of concerns about where the information is going, and the request there be more safeguards over that information where it is provided. And that there's also some less than well-defined terms. It talks about, in addition to board members, which are specifically identified, it talks about individuals with substantial control over financial reporting for the common or for the corporation. And so in a corporate setting, if you're IBM, that's probably pretty easy to do. If you're in a community association, you know, is that the treasurer? Is that the community manager? Is that the management company? So there's lots of things that aren't really well defined as far as who would be obligated to make those reports. And so those are some of the things that we're seeking some clarification to at the moment.
Well, I know that CLAC really does make a difference, because we've been talking briefly about SB 326. Originally, we were lumped into the Senate Bill
721.
Yeah. And through that effort, we were able to get removed until they could rewrite it and revisit it and make it a little bit more HOA directive instead of lumping it in with apartments and other commercial buildings. So it does work. But we are at that point. Do you have a story you can share with us on the power of CLAC, since our podcast is called HOA, It's a True Story?
Sure. Well, in 721 and 326 is a good place to start. That if you recall back, it's probably almost 10 years ago or so, there was an apartment complex, Library Gardens Apartments in Berkeley, that had a balcony collapse.
Right.
And that there was an issue where, you know, what are we going to do about this kind of thing? And so while the backstory of that particular collapse, you know, it was apartments, it appears that it wasn't very well maintained. There's photos that show mushrooms growing on the balcony and different things like that. And so there was a lot of places you could point the blame at there. But unfortunately, that sometimes when the legislature gets involved, they want a one-size-fits-all kind of solution. And a lot of times the problems don't naturally lend themselves to that type of thing. But the goodness in that was that when we got involved and we started talking with the team that was bringing that bill, we were able to communicate with them and say, hey, you know, we appreciate there's a legitimate concern here, but we think there's a better way to do it. And that the senator who brought the bill was open to us to say, hey, you know, if I work with the authors, and we get them to exempt community associations from the 721 bill. Will you come back the next year and work with us to draft a bill that will address community associations? And so in that particular instance, the legislative process worked pretty well. And so we had a receptive audience in Sacramento, and we got to bring together a good team to divide, to address some of the things. So 721 was pretty, it's pretty broad. It required destructive testing. So actually opening up balconies rather than in 326, which is visual inspections. It had much shorter timelines for not only making the reports, but also for making the repairs. And just in the way in which community associations work, where you meet once a month and there's a process. If you have to do a special assessment, there's statutory deadlines. And if you have to get a loan and you need a homeowner's vote, all those timelines that were in 721 weren't going to work. And so that we were able to come back the following year and get 326 drafted didn't ultimately work out exactly the way we'd hoped. In fact, one of the things that got narrowed was you could be a general contractor or an architect or various types of engineers in 721, but you had to be an architect or a structural engineer to do the 326 balcony inspections. And so because of the fact that the number of structural engineers and architects who are interested in doing this work is not as large as the number of balconies that need to be inspected, and that particularly as we're coming up on the statutory deadline, there is a bill actually that CLAC brought this year that is going to seek to, one, expand the list of folks who can inspect to include more broadly engineers. So you could be a civil engineer, for example, and be involved in that inspection process, and also seeking to get an extension of the time for the initial inspections to be conducted. And so we already heard some pushback from one of the committees about the extension. And so whether that ultimately happens or not, I'm not sure, but the idea of expanding the list of who can do the inspections is something that seems to generally be recognized as a good thing to do. And so that's a good example of how the legislative process worked. And that the other thing that came out of that, and if you haven't looked at 326 in a while, you may not have been aware of it, but there, as we were walking out the door, one of the staffers said, "Hey, are you interested in talking to us about construction defect issues?" And there is an issue that needs to be addressed, and it has to do with a lot of times when developers are writing their CC&Rs, they would put language in there that said, you can't bring a complaint against the developer for construction defects unless you have a vote of the membership. Well, that's sometimes pretty hard to do. And so there was actually a constituent in that senator's district who complained about it, said, we have all these problems, but we can't get a vote in order to bring a construction defect claim. And so that tucked in on the back end of 326, there is some construction defect reform language, which makes it easier for communities to bring constructive defect claims if they're able to do so. So anything like a mandatory homeowner vote prior to having that construction defect claim brought is considered void and unenforceable. So sometimes good things happen when you're just in the right place at the right time and you have smart people.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's very timely. We just had our podcast this week on 326, the final year. So good to know they're making some revisions. I'm not sure about the civil engineer doing inspections of elevated building balconies, but it'll all work out.
I will admit I'm not the world's most knowledgeable person on the issue, but I've had civil engineers go in very specific detail about that. It's only like three or four different courses that you take as a structural engineer, and they're making a compelling claim to do that.
Good.
And so we'll see how that shakes out. But the fact that you can do it in an apartment complex or a commercial building, but you can't do it in a residential building, right, it seems like an interesting distinction. And I think part of the belief was that, at least on the why contractors were excluded, is perhaps they were concerned that the contractors were going to find a problem so they could then, bid to fix it type of thing.
Yeah.
Well, that happens, that could happen anywhere. But I think the bottom line is having more people involved and having competition, hopefully make the costs a little better, would be helpful, because no one, I think, anticipated how expensive it was going to be to do those inspections.
Oh, we did.
Well, I'm glad. But it's a tough business. And I'm sure you had a lot of folks in the pandemic who didn't do much. And now all of a sudden you've got more calls than you can answer probably.
Well, yeah. And right now we're dealing with the fact that the inspectors that will do the inspections are all booked out till next year. So the reports aren't going to make it in time. So.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for your participation. And if anybody's interested in CLAC, you can go to the CAI website and look up the California Legislative Action Committees or participate through your local CAI. And if you still need more information, maybe they could reach out to you, Karen, or they can always get us to Karen for his response. So thank you again for joining us.
Well, Reagan, Bill, very good to be with you, and thank you for your time.